AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
I'm very direct in terms of my approach with them. And I'm very determined to succeed, right? And so there's certain expectations that I came to Harvard with. And with those expectations came certain standards, right? And I made it very clear what the standards were, what the non-negotiables were. And there was some friction there to start, right? And, you know, I think the really cool thing about last year's success is that hug at the end of that Ivy League tournament championship game was like a culmination of just so many emotions.
All right, we are here, another episode of Not Even D2. We got a fire episode where we talk with Carrie Moore, head coach of Harvard women's basketball program. Really good coach, which we'll talk about in a second. But bro, we had a fun weekend. I'll say you came out to the city to visit me and chill with your fam. Just talk about what you've been on lately and how you feeling.
Yeah, feeling good, bro. I was definitely glad to get down to the city. You know, it's always good to get, you know, a little bit of a reset going down there and, you know, seeing family, seeing my boy. And it was fun. I had a good time. Always love being back in the city. What about you, bro? How you doing?
Chilling, bro. Life is good. We got a little break at NYU coming up soon, so I'm looking forward to that fall break. Like you said, the weekend was cool. I'm a little upset the Red Sox got bounced by the Yankees. We don't got to talk too much about that. But hype for the NBA.
Now, so it's cool.
What'd you say?
They getting bounced right now, the Yankees.
Yeah, they looking sorry right now. I'm not going to lie. But W playoffs have been fun. I was low-key rooting for Phoenix, but they getting bounced as well. So I guess my fandom is just all over the place. But college sports is about to come around, and, you know, we super locked in for that. It's going to be a really lit season, I think, for women's and men's. But let's talk about this episode a little bit with Coach Carrie Moore. Like I said, Harvard women's basketball, that's a big statement in itself. Last year, she led them to a 24-5 record. They were 10-2 in the conference. Ivy League play is lit. But just talk to me about this episode, bro.
Definitely a great episode. Shout out Coach Moore for getting on the podcast. It took, you know, she's really busy. A woman, so it took, you know, I had to reach out a couple of different times, but definitely glad we had her on the pod. And it was a great conversation, bro. We talked about, you know, her playing career a little bit, her coaching career, her philosophy on building the Harvard program. And she's just a great coach, bro. Like, we talked about it towards the end of the episode, but just what her future looks like in college basketball. But she's a star amongst, you know, she's a star, bro, in women's college basketball right now. And I'm really excited to see where her future goes.
Yeah, 100%. I think she's like one of them ones when it comes to coaching, bro. And I feel like some of the things we talk about, you'll feel the impact that she has on the coaching game, and like some of her insights on building good defenses, all that is just really good content. But Ivy League play, like I said, is super good, especially with Harvard, Columbia, and Princeton. I'm not gonna say my predictions quite yet. I want to see like some of the non-com before I give mine. But I'd say like Harvard is going into the season with a little bit of chip on their shoulder because it was their first time in program history. It's time for like Coach Moore to prove whether like that was just not a fluke, but like if she can continue that success. So I want to see how she kind of handles that, but also losing a WNBA caliber player like Harmony Turner. Now you lose your best player. A lot of teams are going to be circling your game on the calendar. So it's a tough challenge to get back to the Ivy League championship and win it. But I think when you talk about Harvard and what they can do, like, Coach Moore is the person that you want to have to be able to tackle a steep challenge like that. So that's my challenge for her going into the season. Obviously, my word is nothing compared to like what she actually wants to do. But that'll be my thing for her. I don't know if you have any other comments before we get into the episode.
Nah, I mean, you know, you kind of capped it off. They have a lot of great players. She's a great she develops her players very well. They're all high IQ players. And, you know, they trained with Mitch a little bit over the summer. So, you know they right getting into the season for sure.
Nah, it's tough, but let's get into the conversation with Coach Moore. All right, we are here with Coach Kerry Moore. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Of course, definitely appreciate you getting on. Took a little bit of planning, coordinating, but definitely super excited for this episode, Coach. I had a quick question for you. You are coaching at Harvard right now, and Harvard's in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And I really like Cambridge a lot, and it can be really nice in the summers and the fall. So just talk to us about what you kind of did this summer, any trips, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's actually wonderful because, you know, the season's over, spring, summer, right? And it's the best time to be in Boston. So we actually get to enjoy the best part of the city or the best time to be in the city, if you will, because I'll have to admit, I don't see much of the city during the basketball season because I'm either in the gym or at home on my couch watching film. So I actually turned 40, believe it or not, in May.
So to Africa.
And I decided to leave Boston for that. And my partner and I took a trip to South Africa. That was so dope. Just the vibes were just immaculate. Had never done anything like that before. But we did safari, winelands, and then Cape Town, the city, and just cannot say enough good things about it. But to answer your question, Ruta, when we came back from that trip, we stayed a little bit more in New England. We went to, where do we go? We went to Plum Island most recently in August. So that's like probably an hour 15 from Boston. Yeah. Felt like we had the whole like beach to ourselves. We stayed in a nice little boutique hotel, did the beach for like 3-4 days, just really shut it down. And we love the sun. We love to be outdoors. We love the water. Love the beaches, which makes it so great. Nahant Beach is pretty close to, I don't even know if that's how you say it, but that's how you spell it. But I know the cities are pronounced crazy over here.
So weird out there.
I'm still learning. But yeah, everybody's outdoors. They're walking, they're running, they're biking. There's concerts. We just went to the Breezy Bowl at Fenway last week. I mean, that was my little 19, 21 year old self was going crazy in there. the vibes are always crazy in the summer. We joke with our players a lot, like, you know, they're missing out because they're only here during, you know, the coldest months of the year. And they're like, you know, they're trying to get up out of here as quickly as possible. I'm like, you guys have no idea what you're missing, you know, around this time. So it was great though.
I got two questions, one Boston, one about Africa. So my Boston question is, do you hit any Red Sox games or no?
Yeah, so I went to one before Breezy. So it was like probably a month before that. It was really cool, summer night, love that. My partner and I went with our assistant, Steve Harney, and his now fiance. So that was great. I have tickets to the last regular season game because they're playing my team, Detroit Tigers.
It's gonna be a big series for us.
Yeah, that's what I hear. So I'm excited about that. So that'll be probably our last trip to Fenway for the summer.
And then my Africa one is, I'm actually planning to go to South Africa next summer. So give me like one or two things you recommend me doing.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I would recommend like really, because I felt like we did kind of the bougie trip where, you know, like which is great. I loved it. But like, if I was going to go back, I would love to just like really get into kind of the depths of Cape Town and just like really see, you know, how, like, we saw like a certain way of life.
Touristy, yeah.
and just more of, you know, for a cultural experience, just really seeing, you know, how some of their locals live. And, you know, because we heard so much about just the history there. And, you know, there's still a decent amount of, not segregation, but, you know, as any big city, right? Like you can go, you're in one type of area, and then you drive 5 minutes up the road and you're in a whole other type of situation. So, but just the people were incredible. And so would like to, you know, really spend more time, you know, with more local South Africans for sure.
No, it's definitely tough. I feel like I've switched my mindset when I go on trips now is instead of being like a tourist, try to actually dive into the culture.
Get in the mix.
Yeah. I heard Trevor Noah say like, when you're on vacation and you're like on the tourist aspect, it's more, you're just on vacation with other Americans instead of like actually being exploring the city for what it is. But definitely. Let's talk about some Harvard basketball. You guys are coming off of a legendary season for the Harvard women's basketball program. First Ivy League title in program history. Congrats to you. You guys were 24-5 on the year, 11-3. And I've listened to a few interviews. You were saying like your expectations going into the year was we wanted a championship. So more like what were your thoughts or why were you confident in that? And then how does the success of making it to the tournament, winning the first Ivy League title, change your expectations heading into this upcoming year?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I think you win with people. I say that all the time. And I felt like we had the right people in place. You know, I have an incredible staff. They've been with me since day one here. We're going on year four together. We joke. It's like we're starting our senior year together this season. But, you know, I outside of staff, I felt like, you know, we had the right people in place on our team. You know, we had Harmony Turner as a senior version of her who, you know, was one of the best seniors in the country, was drafted at the end of the year, had arguably, you know, one of the best careers ever in a Harvard women's basketball uniform. And just, you know, preseason knowing that was something that she was capable of doing. I felt like, you know, she could really lead us in the way that we needed, and really put the team on our back. And I felt like at times she did that and she gave us, you know, the confidence maybe that some of others around her, you know, really needed, to get on the bandwagon of like, okay, we really can do this. Like we're actually a really good team. You know, she had a senior teammate, Elena Rodriguez, who played a lot of minutes for us, and equally was, you know, as eager to win at a high level and have her most successful season, as Harmony was. And then our third senior, Mona, I mean, she didn't play a lot, but she played huge minutes at Indiana to get that big win to kind of set the tone for us. And she was just a tremendous leader, incredibly selfless, set the tone, was a truth teller to her teammates, told them exactly what they needed to hear. And I just felt like, you know, going back to the people comment, we just had the right seniors in place to really lead and you know, take us forward. And they were a player-led team, you know, the whole way. And the funny part about it is, honestly, we really didn't talk about winning a championship a lot. Like, we talked about the process. We really fell in love with the day-to-day grind. And, you know, we took it one day at a time. We tried to stack wins and we ended up, you know, stacking a lot of wins, and putting ourselves in a really great position towards the end of the year. So.
Nah, definitely. I mean, you guys, it seems to me hearing your story just then, but also looking at you guys on the court, you guys were locked in the whole year, right? Yeah. Just like you said, focus on the day-to-day efforts. And, you know, also watching like the Ivy League championship game, you saw it after the game, like you hugged Harmony. Yeah. Like you guys were hugging on the floor, and like that showed me like you have a great relationship with not only her, but most likely your whole team. Yeah. And you know, when I look at your bio, also they talk about how you're a recruitment coordinator and how you brought in some of the best classes at UNC and Michigan. Yeah. So talk about that first aspect of, you know, bringing players into Harvard and really building a lifelong relationship with them.
Yeah, I think relationships matter. You know, they don't care what you know until they know you care. And I, you know, I heard that quote, I don't know how many years ago, and it's always stuck with me. I think as an assistant, and I did it for so long, you know, you really have you grow these incredible relationships with your, you know, for sure your positional kids, but definitely the entire team in that role, because, you know, you spend so much time with them outside of practice, so many individual conversations and things like that. And it just prepares you once you're in this chair, for me to be, you know, incredibly authentic in my approach of like really trying to get to know them. When you take over a program, it's not easy, especially when you're, you know, being coached by someone like myself who is really passionate, who is you know, very, I think, very much a truth teller, right? Like, I don't sugarcoat things. I'm very direct in terms of my approach with them. And I'm very determined to succeed, right? And so there's certain expectations that I came to Harvard with. And with those expectations came certain standards, right? And I made it very clear what the standards were, what the non-negotiables were. And there was some friction there to start, right? And, you know, I think the really cool thing about last year's success was, is that hug at the end of that Ivy League tournament championship game was like a culmination of just so many emotions and so many, you know, up and down roller coaster experience that Harmony and I, you know, have had. It has not always been pretty. It honestly, that was, you know, we had climbed and just crawled our way to get to the top, and it just felt so good. And I think that's why she, you know, did a beeline for me, because we've just been through so much together, you know, blood, sweat, tears, 3 years worth of just, you know, learning and growing, me learning as a head coach and growing as a head coach, and her learning, you know, about herself as a player and a person, and growing as a player and a person. And I felt like, you know, for us to experience that together was just really special.
I mean, relationships is such a big part of, you know, building a team, especially a winning team. And you already talked about having, you know, the right people around the program to, you know, help you guys succeed. And, you know, you talked about in the interviews how you feel like Harvard's brand being on par with any of the top schools in the country. And I agree with you. But one thing I'm interested to hear your take on or opinion, the academic brand is just as well known, like the rigorous academic brand. So I imagine, I feel like sometimes in conversations with recruits, like they might, I don't want to say be skeptical, but have a lot of questions about that. So I'm wondering, how do you kind of approach that aspect of recruiting with, you know, Harvard being a top school in the country, really?
Yeah, I think if you, first of all, the nature, the landscape of college athletics right now is just crazy. You know, we're having to go up against different types of things that, in the recruiting process, that maybe we didn't have to do even 3-5 years ago. So yeah, it is very different. I think the brand still, though, the academic, you know, tradition, reputation really does work in our favor, because, you know, I think players want to come here, even in the midst of, you know, being offered, you know, money, rev share, whatever it is, to go to said other school. I think they choose Harvard because it is a place that they know will forever give back to them, right? With the degree that they're going to receive after 4 years here. And we still have, like, there's still this like cherished traditional experience, this transformational experience that for us, we feel is an extreme positive compared to what is, you know, right now, very much a transactional experience going on, you know, elsewhere. So yeah, our players want to come here and they want to be surrounded by the best. They want to be excellent at what they do, not just in basketball, but in the classroom. And so for the right type of person, the right type of mind, you know, that can be more exciting than it is, you know, more of, you know, a turnoff, if you will.
I had a few questions like bouncing off of that. The first one is, you're like, I'm in a high academic space right now, and it's syllabus week, and I'm already a little stressed about like what's upcoming. So I'm kind of curious how you're kind of like, what the conversations are like with you and your players about how you're trying to like shape them into developing the high academic and basketball landscape of, you're in Harvard, it's a lot of expectations, but we also need you to be at your best, like on the court. So how you're kind of going about that?
Yeah, this is, I mean, definitely a, you know, full service staff. Like I say that all the time, like we're here to serve them and to coach them, not just in basketball, but in life. Right. And, you know, we have a mantra. I'm sure you guys have seen it. If you looked anything up about our program, you know, the mantra, believe it, is a very personal thing to me, but is now, you know, it's what we say and what we do in our program in terms of just really building this transformational belief within our players. within themselves and collectively as a group, right? And just understanding what that belief and what that confidence can do and the power that it has for us to achieve whatever it is, you know, that we put our minds to. And that's not just basketball. That's a life thing. And I think we've seen in just 3 years how much that phrase has really transformed, you know, everything that we do. I think when we first got here, we inherited a group that was, you know, really talented, but just knew nothing about how to win at a high level. And once you just, you know, enact a little bit of belief in them, and a little bit of understanding, you know, what that means and what that looks like, and how to be a champion every single day, not just wanting to be a champion in March when, you know, you're cutting nets and hanging banners, but yeah, I think it's completely transformed, you know, all that we do. How you do anything is how you do everything. We talk about that a lot. And that, so that's, you know, how they're acting in the classroom, how they show up, what rows are you sitting in class. If you're a back row type of girl, you're probably going to be a bench type of girl on court. You know what I mean? That's your approach, right? You can't approach class that way. And then all of a sudden you're going to come to practice and then approach it in a different way. It's like, you know, I think consistently across the board, you know, high level achievers approach, you know, things the right way. And they want excellence in all that they do. And I hope that if anything, you know, I can make our players think twice about, you know, when they walk into a classroom, you know, where they're going to sit that day.
What you're saying makes me want to play for you. Like, just, I feel like it's an instant impact of just how you carry yourself and how you speak about, like, the expectations is just good for your players to get under that system, and they're already bought in to just, all right, my expectations are here now. It doesn't matter that I'm at Harvard, like, the expectations are still here. But you talked earlier about, like, the recruiting aspect, how some schools are transactional. And this can be more of a broad answer about the Ivy League, but the Ivy League currently, I don't believe they're allowed to give out collectives or NIL.
Correct.
Ruta, what's the kid's name that's sitting out from Princeton?
Caden Pierce, I believe.
Yeah. So, like, I'm just curious, do you think that's a drawback? And I know it might not be to the same level in women's basketball, but you guys not being able to kind of give out NIL money. Because I'm assuming a girl like Harmony could go to P5 school or P4 mm-hmm. and make a lot of money. So just talk about, like, that process.
Yeah, definitely. And I think everyone's journey is different, right? Like, we're all on our own, like, individual paths, and people have to make decisions that they feel are best for them. So, you know, Caden's experience is his own experience, and Harmony's experience was her own experience. Yes, within the same league. But I think very different situations, right? And I think what's transpiring on the men's side is not necessarily what is currently happening on the women's side, but, you know, hopefully for us that is not heading our way. You know, I really value the fact that we can recruit players and really tell them this is a 4-year and forever you know, situation, right? Like, this is a place that you are going to, if you come in with, you know, two other players in your class, like, you're going to graduate with them and, you know, they're going to be in your wedding one day, you know, they're going to be the godmom of your kids. Like you got, this is a meaningful, you know, relationship that you're going to have for life. And, I really firmly believe that. And I think, you know, we're still very much, you know, living that in our program. And I can only really speak on our program and, like, you know, where we're at. And yeah, Harmony could have gone somewhere between her junior and senior season, but, you know, I think when you're invested and you understand, you know, the meaning of a Harvard degree and the power of a Harvard degree and just the experience and really sticking it out, knowing you can accomplish whatever it is that you want to accomplish, you can get drafted, you can be a pro, and, you know, you can fall back on this awesome degree at a certain point in your life when the ball stops bouncing. It's like, you know, why not Harvard? Why run, you know, and chase the next shiny thing at whatever school? So, yeah, I'm just excited that we're in this situation within our program. And, you know, at some point, maybe we'll get to a point where, you know, our girls can get supplemented in a way. I really hope that does happen. I want them to have all the other things that all these other student athletes are having, but everybody else doesn't have a Harvard degree though, as well. Nice. So I make them, you know, very much known to that fact.
I mean, you're 100% right. That Harvard degree is, you know, there's not much you can really say other than it's Harvard, like you mentioned. And
yeah.
I just love your answer too about the high achievers, like in the classroom, on the court. And it's obviously you're producing high achievers, like high achieving talent, because you're, you know, winning the conference and going to the NCAA tournament. And one aspect of your program that I wanted to talk about was your defense.
Yeah.
Because your defense is elite. Like I watched, like I said, the championship game. Yeah. Honestly, didn't catch too many other games. That's maybe on my part, but I'm definitely going to watch.
Sorry, Rudy. We got you now, though.
I'm invested in Harvard women's basketball for sure. But I'm just kind of interested. You talked about how, like, you use constraints in practice, like build communication on defense. And I find that interesting. So give us some more gems, the audience, on how to build, you know, real high-level defense.
Yeah, you know, we have three non-negotiables in the program. It's communication, competition, compete, and then be coachable. So coachability. And I think the communication aspect just speaks to both sides of the ball, but specifically defensively. If we're going to fly around, you know, if we're going to press, we're going to peel switch a lot, you know, we're going to run and jump and, you know, do a lot of different things, then we need to be able to communicate with one another. So yeah, we'll either, like, we do a lot of different things in terms of the approach, right? Like sometimes we'll turn the music up really loud, and that forces them to really have to communicate at a higher level than they ever have. But sometimes we'll turn the music all the way off as well. So then it's like, okay, what are y'all really saying to each other, right? Because a lot of times it's like, okay, I hear myself, I hear our coaches, and I hear the people on the bench, but it's like, okay, but are the people on the floor actually talking and saying what they need to, you know, say? So there's times where we'll have them really create their own energy and really, you know, put them on the hot seat, if you will, in terms of, are they saying the things that they need to say? So I think you value what you emphasize, and I emphasize the right things, I feel, that really help us play at a high level. It's a lot of the little things, but the little things to me are the big things, and they equate to wins at the end of the day. So we just want to wreak as much havoc. We have the athletes, we have the length, we have the versatility. We feel we switch a lot. You know, we got after it in the full court last year. And it really set the tone, and it even in games where we couldn't score, we felt like, you know, we were still in positions to win. And I'll take an ugly win any day. and I, you know, I'd so much rather just hang my hat on the defensive end than the offensive end any day. That's just who I am and where I'm from, probably.
No, that's special. You don't hear coaches talking about turning the music all the way up to provide this aspect and then turn it all the way down to provide like the opposite. But yeah. Like to bring up the statistics, you guys only allowed 52.9 points per game. That's crazy. Top of the Ivy. Teams shot 37.6% on you guys from the field. That's also crazy. You guys are top five in scoring defense. So we talked to Gail Folks, who's the Davidson's women's basketball head coach.
Yeah.
And she's her identity is kind of built around 3-point shooting.
Yeah.
We got into a good conversation about how she thinks her offense of strength kind of translates to some of their defensive strength on guarding the 3-point line. So I'm kind of curious how you think like the full court pressing, the havoc that you guys create on one side of the ball kind of helps you, because like you guys have a positive assist to turnover margin like year to year. So just talk about how you think the ends kind of balance each other.
Yeah, definitely. First off, just because you were throwing out the stats, I wanted to say like, we've been saying so long, because I was in the league prior to being hired here. I was an assistant at Princeton for 5 years, right? So I was there when, you know, Courtney essentially built the program to what it is now. And I say that because over time, since I first stepped foot on that campus, the best defensive team in the league has always won the championship. Mm-hmm. And now there's like two ways to win the championship, right? So like, you know, I was hopeful after we didn't win the regular season. I was like, all right, we got this one chance, because we had finally won. We were the best scoring defensive team in the league. And so I was like, all right, this, you know, I've been saying this for 3 years, like, let's put ourselves in a really great position to win the league. And, you know, we ended up winning the Ivy League tournament. And so I just, and our team really just rallied behind that. You know, they kept saying, like coach said, you know, the best defensive team will win the championship. And I'm just so happy that happened. And there was a correlation there, because you know, now they'll actually, you know, look at me and trust me a little bit more. But but to answer your question, I think what we do defensively, you know, really just jump starts what we do offensively. I think you get a couple steals early, you get some layups, easy layups, right? You see the ball go through the net, then the rim becomes a little bit bigger, right? So I think that very much helped the likes of Harmony, but it also helped the likes of a lot of our other kind of, you know, just more role players, in a sense of that's, they were able to kind of get some easy ones, you know, that way. I think it helped us be more of a transition team, and get out and run and, you know, run wide and get that early spacing that we really valued, within our system. And, I think, you know, if we can do what we wanted to do defensively, we felt like, you know, we would generate some type of offense, enough for us to be competitive and win the basketball game.
Tough, for sure. I want to transition into a different topic, and this will be the last question before we take a quick break. But the Ivy League is, I don't want to talk down on the other teams, but it's pretty like top heavy right now, like you guys, Columbia and Princeton. But like there's other good teams in the conference for sure, and there's definitely other good players. Like looking at some of the different girls' film throughout the past few days, I was like, the Ivy League has good talent. Like you guys had a battle with Brown late in the year this year. So I'm just kind of curious how you go about, like, how you and your staff go about the scouting process specifically for like the top teams, Columbia and Princeton. And I'm more curious, like, what the change was to, because you guys got swept by Columbia, and then you guys beat them in postseason play. So just talk about, one, the scouting process for Ivy League teams, and then how it kind of changes, like, against those top teams.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Like you said, the league, especially the top of the league, is just, you know, so tough. Three teams making the NCAA tournament, first time ever. I mean, it's just like, why the year that we actually are really good, does the league need to be the best that it's ever been in, you know, Ivy League history? But so, you know, that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes. So, and it honestly made us better, right? Like, and I think you said Columbia swept us, but we were swept by Princeton during the year.
Oh, my bad.
No, it's fine. I just want to make sure I said, you know, what happened. But we actually lost. We lost at Princeton early in the Ivy League on a buzzer beater. And so that was heartbreaking in and of itself. And then because it's early in the league, right? And you know, you lose a game like that and your players, and we had such a great, you know, I think we were like 11-1 in the non-conference, and we're starting Ivy League play, and we're like, oh yeah, you know, like we're about to beat these guys and whatever, and you feel really good about yourself going into the game, and we came out really well. It's at their place, and they beat us at the buzzer. And you know, it's just, you know, I think for us, it was great because it allowed us to really get back to the drawing board and, you know, actually we're not as good as we think we are. And, you know, we've really got some work to do. And so we did that work. You know, we lost to Columbia early, and then we played Columbia a week later, maybe 2 weeks later, went to their place. After they embarrassed us at home, we went to their place and beat them on their court, and then turned around a couple weeks later and we played Princeton and Columbia in the Ivy League tournament. So, it was very much, you know, I think we learned some lessons. I think we wanted to maybe win, you know, some of those games that we lost to put us in a position to, you know, win a regular season championship, because we felt like our team was good enough to do that. But, when you go to Brown at the end of the year and you almost lose again, I think it was an incredible wake up call, you know, for our group to, hey, we got to play better. We have to show up, and if we don't, any given night, we could lose. And so I think that, you know, refocused, reshaped mentally our group. And we really approached the end of the season in a much different way. So to answer your question, though, I think scouting is, you know, it's so personal in the league, right? Like you just, you know these players by name instead of number, right? Like you've been around, they kind of grow up with your players at the same time. You know the coaches, you know the offense, you know what they're going to do defensively. So then it's just ugly. It's just, you know, the games are, they're gritty, they're, you know, they're tough. And you just really try to, like, I think more so instead of like knowing who they are and what they're going to do, it's like, I say it all the time. It's like, we need to focus on us, and just make sure we're the best version of ourselves. And that maybe, you know, we've got some different looks to kind of throw in there for them to kind of surprise them. But I think from a mental mindset, we've got to make sure that, you know, we're going in there feeling extremely confident mentally, and emotionally, and then physically, we've just got to out-tough, out-grit the other team, because the league is just, you know, combined so gritty and so, you know, just so tough. If you watched that Ivy League tournament, I mean, just team, like both teams just going at it and they let us, like, didn't call a lot of fouls. But, you know, I guess that's how you want it, you know, at the end there, you want it to be kind of cutthroat practice style, but yeah, that's what makes it so fun, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I heard your pregame speech against Princeton when you were saying, yeah, like we got swept, but we, no team like beats us three times. I thought that was really powerful. So shout out to you. But stay with us while I take a quick break.
All right, we are here back from break with Coach Moore. So Coach, you know, you talked about, you know, before we got into the break about how, you know, your defensive focus as a coach, but when I looked at your profile, you scored over 2,000 points in college. And I think you are the all-time leading scorer for both men and women at Western Michigan University, which is crazy to say out loud. I'm not going to lie. It's super tough. So, and I imagine, you know, you spend a lot of countless hours in the gym to prepare for those moments. So really, I just want to hear, like, what allowed you to flourish while you were, you know, during your time at Western Michigan?
Yeah, I felt like, you know, I had great coaches along the way, you know, prior to my college experience. I also had a great coach there. I had really solid assistants that would get in the gym with me, you know, whenever I wanted to. You know, I had great teammates too. You know, they were actually a really good team before I even got there. You know, they won the MAC the year before. And I felt like they lost a player. So they lost a player that was, you know, 5'9". Guard that did exactly, you know, what I was capable of doing. And she was the only person that graduated, and everybody else was, you know, coming back. And I just felt like, I was like, oh, you know, I can go there and I can really help them right away. And I, you know, I just took the approach of, I just have always been about the work. You know, I just put my head down, and just be a doer. I say that a lot to our team, just get better and let the results take care of themselves. And that's what I did. I'm a mid-major girl at heart, right? Like, I, you know, I've never been the highest ranked player. I've never been the most athletic or, you know, the strongest or whatever. But I guarantee you, I've got a bigger heart than anyone on the floor. And, you know, I'm probably in the gym before them and stay, you know, stay after. You know, as long as anyone. So, I just worked. I worked, and, you know, I think it paid off. And you give to the game, then the game will give so much back to you. And I felt like, you know, I really reaped the benefits of that.
Coach, I'm not gonna lie. I tried finding some clips on YouTube.
There's none there.
you gotta send us some. We gotta see the buckets.
I'm that old that there's not even any YouTube clips of me. It's crazy. We did like disc, whatever you call them, CDs and VHS is crazy.
what I know you were a scorer, but like, were you a shooter? Were you getting downhill? What was your game like?
So I was more mid-range, actually. I don't look like it at all now because everybody talks about how skinny I am, which is crazy. But like, but I loved the weight room and I was strong as an ox. And so I would, there was a lot of mismatches on the wing. So I was a driver, slasher. Love to get in the paint. I shot a lot of free throws. If you look at the stat line, you know, I'm definitely in the record books in terms of free throws, either attempted, made, hopefully both. But I didn't actually become a really good 3-point shooter until I went overseas, because then I was actually one of the smaller people on the floor. And I started, you know, basically having to shoot more so than drive. But yeah, I mixed it up. I had a lot of double doubles, rebounded the crap out of the ball. Just gritty and just found a way.
Yeah. When you talk to like a former player that's now a coach, obviously they can relate to the players and, you know, the mental aspect of, I was a player before, I can help you in this way. But I know that you have a young point guard you had a freshman starting point guard, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious how you're kind of like helping her game? Like, what are you focusing on this offseason with her game?
Yeah, I'm excited for her. You know, I think she's last year she was exactly what we needed her to be, right? Like, I think she scored probably like 3 points a game. But she, you know, got us into stuff. She handled pressure for the most part, you know, pretty well. And yeah, got us into stuff. She was a vocal leader. She had a presence and people followed her. She knew what we were in, how to run it, where everybody needed to be. And you know, did what she had to do. She was also a great defender. And I think with our identity being what it was, she needed to be out there. She's a 6'1" point guard with great length, really good handle. And just the best thing about her is just how composed she is. And I hope that this year, you know, we can really, cause we need her to, she must, you know, take that next step in terms of, you know, just really being able to attack matchups, get the ball downhill, be aggressive, not just be a passer. You know, hunt her shots, hit the open ones. I don't think she'll ever be kind of, you know, that point guard that like needs to score, but I need her to score when necessary. Yeah. And I think, you know, just really excited to see how she continues to grow as a defender and as a leader on our team. So we have a lot of meetings in my office, a lot of film sessions. She's really great. She's from Greece originally, but very hip to American culture and, you know, speaks the language really well and just has a great way or about her. So, love that she's here.
Saying, you saying that she's from Greece. I noticed that you have there was one, another player from Spain. I saw a couple different countries from on the roster. So yep. Just talk about the value of recruiting like overseas. Like, it's becoming, I feel like, more popular by the year for coaches to go and do that. So just talk about that aspect of your program.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think just their understanding and just IQ of the game is extremely high. And, you know, I think a lot of other coaches would really agree with me that there's just a way about them I think really translates really well to what we do stateside. And, you know, all the international players we've had on our team, we had 3 last year. We have 2 this year. We graduated 2 of them, but they're just incredibly mature. I think they can take, you know, truth telling, they can take hard coaching, and they work and they lead, and they play a type of game, you know, that we want to play, which is, you know, I think, really relatable for them. And, you know, I think Liddy had a very easy time transitioning to what we were doing. I think Elena, you know, she didn't play very much her first year because, well, I don't really know why, but I wasn't the coach then. But then I come in, and, you know, she immediately is, you know, one of our best players and you know, a focal point in our offense. So, I very much value, you know, how they play and just their understanding of the game.
Like Elena's game a lot. She's a dog. Like,
she's so smooth. Yeah.
I saw 1-3. She shot in the corner.
Yeah, yeah. And then pointed at the bench.
Yeah, I saw that
game a lot. They were talking that mess. Tell them to be quiet.
Oh, I respect it. So, Coach, I noticed that you've been a part of some high major programs and you've coached with, like, some legendary coaches to give the viewers a little bit of context. You were at Princeton 2 times when they were kind of at their peak with Courtney. She led them to a perfect season. Were you on the roster for that?
No, I wasn't there then, the 34-0 team. Yeah. But I was watching it from afar for sure.
And then you went to UNC with her, and then you transitioned to Creighton for a few seasons. That coach has been there for like 25 years or something. Yep. And then you had a really historic year at Michigan where you guys made it to the Elite Eight. So just talk about like your different stops a little bit and what you learned from like coaching under each of those, you know, great coaches.
Yeah, for sure. I am so lucky and honestly just so grateful for my experience and my journey because, you know, I had no idea it was going to pan out the way that it did. I was waiting to go back overseas. My agent wasn't finding anything and I needed to make a dollar. Cause my parents had cut me off already. And, and so I just hopped in this like NCAA, you know, job portal and saw this opening, for the director of basketball operations at Princeton. And I was like, why not? Let me, you know, send an email or apply. And literally like the next day, you know, Courtney's responding back to me. And I think, you know, you guys were just talking about my playing career, but I think that is what, you know, really attracted her to me, was what she saw on the resume in terms of who I was as a player, and a leader and a student, because I was a great student. And I think it just really aligned with, you know, who she is and obviously Princeton and the mission, on that campus. And so, yeah, that was the best decision. One of the best decisions I've ever made, because it's opened up so many doors for me. Courtney hired me not only at Princeton once, but she hired me there twice, like you said, and then took me again, hired me a third time, took me to North Carolina with her. I learned so much, you know, about just leadership and how to connect with people, how to pick people, how to recruit at a really high level. And it was so cool being at North Carolina. I mean, how can you not, love, being in the house that Jordan built? But yeah. And then, you know, went to Michigan as an assistant, and just, you know, absolutely loved that experience. I felt like Kim, you know, was a lot more like me as, you know, as a, I think as a coach, just in terms of how fiery she is and, just so passionate about the game and, you know, her way about her in terms of it being a communicator and just the level of accountability that exists within her practices, I think is very relatable to, you know, how I run this program. And so when I worked for her, I was like, oh, okay. So you can do it like this and be successful. And it was Michigan. So it was home for me. And I loved it. And, you know, I didn't even speak on my Creighton experience, but Flan is just, you know, so exceptional. He's just the greatest of all time there in Omaha. And, they've raised the bar every year for that program and making it to the Elite Eight, you know, three, four years ago, I think just shows how brilliant he is and just how, you know, awesome that program is and has grown to be over time. So yeah, long-winded way of just saying, you know, I love all of them. They all still very much text me, call me. And I do the same, you know, whenever I need advice or after big wins or terrible losses, whatever it is. I'm so lucky to have worked for them all and to have learned the lessons that I did, because I think it has very much prepared me for, you know, what I'm doing currently.
Yeah. Those are all legends in their own right, for sure. Courtney, if you're listening, we got to get you on the pod, though. So definitely tap in with us.
She must get on this podcast. She's a New Englander, too.
Oh, yeah. We definitely got to get in contact then, Ruta.
We'll figure it out.
So you spent one season at Michigan. And like I said, you guys made it to Elite Eight. Really good year. But I'm kind of curious, like, how that process went, because right after you got the job at Harvard. So kind of how did the Harvard opportunity come about? And what was that like?
Yeah, it was an interesting transition, right? Like, you know, because you're so just engulfed in what's happening with your team, your current team. And as an assistant, you know, I knew we were good. We were going to be good. We wanted to make that run. We knew we were capable of making it to the Final Four. And so when there was communication with Harvard, you know, first of all, I was in contact with Kim and just said, hey, you know, this could be a possibility. This could be something that I'm interested in. But you don't want to spend too much time talking about it because you're focused on, you know, what you're doing and the task at hand. And I loved our team. I loved, you know, everything about that year and, you know, our process as a group. And so when we lost, actually, that's when it all kind of, you know, sped up and happened, you know, really in the matter of probably a week. You know, I was on campus interviewing, offered the job, you know, accepted the job, came out, did the whole, you know, press conference. And then, you know, then it was on me. I think the one story I'll always remember and I love telling is that shortly after I was hired, our sport oversight, his name's Nathan Fry, and he's essentially who I, you know, directly report to. And I had texted him and I was like, hey, I'm going to be, you know, out of the office for a couple of days, but just let me know if you need anything. Cause I was actually going on vacation. And, he was like, hey, you know, you don't have to tell me where you're going. Like, you're the head coach now, you can do what you want to do. And I was like, wow, okay, this is very interesting. Like, this freedom of not having to like report my whereabouts to anyone. I'm now the person that people have to report those things to. So Yeah, that was just a very fun experience for me shortly after I was hired. But yeah, then everything happens so quickly. You know, you have to hire a staff and, you know, do all these things. And I think I had like 3 weeks with the team during that spring, and all we did was defense. Literally didn't even touch basketball. yeah, so it was a whirlwind, but it was incredibly, you know, fun. I felt like Kathy announced her retirement at the beginning of the year. So the job was open all season long. And I, you know, as soon as she announced it, it was one of those things that like made my eyebrows, you know, lift. And I was like, oh, that, you know, that could be the job. But you don't give it real like full attention until, you know, till the time came. And it just was a really good fit.
One thing that I saw, like just looking at your story, Coach. So I think if I'm not mistaken, the former Harvard president called Claudine Gay
was
the person that hired you. And I know she's not the president anymore for Harvard, but she was still at the Ivy League championship game supporting you.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was like so cool that you like still maintain a relationship with her and is like, and you know, thank you for believing me type of thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. There was just a quick story about that. Like, you know, obviously the way she, you know, she resigned from Harvard, you know, wasn't a pleasant, experience, you know, for her, or for, you know, any black and brown, you know, woman on campus, for that matter. We loved her, you know, we love her. She comes to our game still, she's on campus, she's in and around our team a lot. And she showed up, right? Like, and I didn't necessarily ask her to, but once she did, you know, I was hopeful that she would continue to show up, and she did. And she was with us in the NCAA tournament. And I just remember in the press conference, you know, they asked about her and just her relationship to us and, you know, just how she continued to show up for us. And it means so much to me. And, you know, I was emotional in the moment, and I was emotional about a lot of things, but during that time, but especially, you know, just having, you know, her mentorship and, you know, she's such an incredibly strong black, you know, female leader on this campus and just in life and in general. And for me to have those people to look up to, I think it's just really important, as a, you know, as a compass and kind of a guiding light to really navigate this place and these leadership spaces.
Yeah. I mean, Boston's like historically known to not have the best reputation with colored people, but you're for saying sure. Like you have those people to look to, the former president, but now like Ruta and I, or whatever the case may be, have you to look to as like, yeah, you can get in these spaces at high academic Boston area and still fulfill your dreams and succeed at a high level. But on a lighter note, Ruta sent me this picture of one of your game day fits, and you had like MLK on the shirt. My first question is, where'd you get that from? Because I need to get that. And then the second one is, I'm also seeing you wear like, I'll say in quotes, drip a lot. Like you're wearing dunks, or you got good fits on. And that's not like, not a lot of coaches are like that. So just talk about where you get your swag or style from.
Well, I appreciate that, KJ, because, you know, I really try to make sure that
what I'm doing. I see it.
And I honestly have to give a lot of credit to my assistant, Ariel. She is she's probably the swaggiest of us all. And she really puts the outfits together and kind of tells me what to wear. She found the shirts that you're talking about. I think I did a jacket one game for Black History, and then Martin Luther King Day, it was like a long sleeve, but similar kind of print. But no, they're super dope. You're not the first person to ask me where I got it from. I'll have to send you the link. I cannot put it out there on on the podcast. But yeah, I'll definitely send you the link after.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, and we, you know, we try to keep it. We have like different theme games throughout the year. And so, you know, we try to dress up a little bit, like, but not too crazy, you know, keep it casual. I probably always have to do sneakers in games. I don't think I can ever go back to a heel now that I've coached in a dunk. But we've talked about trying to like, you know, really step up, you know, our sideline gear. Cause it's good to just get out of the quarter zip, you know, every once in a while, but especially home games, big games, you know, Ivy League tournament championship. We did the hockey jerseys. those were a hit. Everybody was talking about them, asking me, you know, where we got those from. And then I felt bad for the NCAA tournament. We just did the, you know, kind of pullover situation because I'm like, how do you top that, you know? But yeah, it was a total team effort. And hopefully we can keep, looking good on the sidelines. You gotta look good to play good, to coach good, you know?
Thanks.
Nah, I respect that. You're bringing a different energy to the coaching world. I like that a lot, Coach, for sure.
Thanks, man.
So, you know, it's been a great episode, Coach. And before we get into rapid fire and starting five, you know, we have one more question for you. And, you know, just looking at the trajectory of your career, right? With looking at like all your different stops, UNC, Michigan, right? Creighton, your playing career at Western Michigan, like you just have a real, like you said, high achiever type of resume. And you've accomplished so much, especially in your young head coaching career. And I couldn't see why a blue blood like college team or a WNBA team wouldn't call you about like a head coaching position.
Yeah.
So just overall, give your perspective on your rise in coaching and just your future in your career.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I feel like I've heard those type of, you know, comments, questions, a lot, especially in this past year. But I think the type of person I am is, you know, one, to not get ahead of myself, you know, too much. I've always been the, like, you know, be where your feet are type of person, the, you know, be the head coach in your area. So if I'm a head coach now at Harvard, I'm going to make sure I'm the best damn head coach, you know, that I can possibly be. And, you know, yeah, we won a championship. We had a really good year, but that's just, it's one thing. It's, you know, it's one year. Like, can we really sustain this excellence and be really good over time? Because that's what I want to do, right? Like, I want to be consistently a contender in this league for championships. And I want to develop this great culture that we have and keep continuing to recruit, you know, incredible, you know, student athletes and have a staff surrounding me that, you know, loves me and makes me, you know, the best possible coach that I can possibly be. So that's my focus right now. And, you know, I think if I can do that and stay present, and just put one foot in front of the other, I think everything else will take care of itself because it just has for me. As you've, you know, so eloquently said by talking about, you know, my trajectory here. And I think if I, you know, if I step outside of that, that's one, just, you know, disingenuous to the people that I'm surrounded by on a daily. And two, I think just really takes me, you know, out of the space of being at my best for this group, and they deserve that. So let's be really good for a couple more years and then let's see what happens. But
like I said, I'm super invested in Harvard's women's basketball. Definitely a fan now, Coach. And, you know, I love that answer too. You're leaving a legacy, you know, in that program, and for however long you're at Harvard, you know, it's going to be difficult for that next person to take the job for sure.
Like it was difficult for me replacing a 40-year legend.
You're right. No, but I run rapid fire. KJ runs, you know, starting five. So you ready for rapid fire, Coach?
Yeah. What you got?
All right, let's do it. So first rapid fire question. So you worked at UNC Jordan School, Michigan Jordan School, Princeton Nike School, and now Harvard Nike School.
Yep.
I know probably your bias is towards Harvard overall, but who had like the best gear layout in your opinion?
Yeah. North Carolina, hands down. I mean, I don't even have to think about that. I mean, I probably left there after how long was I there? 3 years, 2 years? I always get mixed up because COVID was in 2020. But I mean, just the amount of Jordans that I had leaving there is unreal.
You were blessed.
Yeah, man. And that, you know, my favorite color is blue, probably not Carolina blue, but like that blue is it's so pretty. And you know, you just never get tired of wearing, you know, those different shades. Now I don't, you know, it's probably one of my least favorite colors because, you know, we
Columbia.
Yeah. but yes, hands down, North Carolina, Jordan gear, shoes all day, every day.
I mean, I don't blame you for that answer, but I will say that Harvard, that little H, all the Nike gear, it's clean.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? I love it.
So next rapid fire question I got for you. So from your playing days, who is like some top players that you played against that you always like love battling against?
Yeah. Geez, that's a great question. I would say, so, I mean, nobody's going to know the answer to these questions or to the people that I'm going to say, really. But there's a, if you look her up, she's great. Her name's Allie Mann. She played at Bowling Green. And I say that because, you know, I always want to win and I always want to, you know, be the best. And she was essentially the best player my class on Bowling Green's team. And they won the MAC championship three of the four definitely years that I was playing in college. And our senior year, they played, they won the league and then went to, they actually made it to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. So, she's from Michigan too. So like someone I grew up playing against, and, you know, just really admired, you know, how she played and just who she was. And she, again, just had this like natural, just like aura to her and like leadership and just a great personality. And, I did not enjoy playing against her. But it was some fun battles that we had. So she's one of them, but I looked up to, like, I mean, all the greats played during my time, right? Like, I actually played against Diana Taurasi, my literally first game of my college career. We played at UConn and it was like the year after they won the national championship. So they were hanging a banner.
Crazy.
The story that I have is that I actually was able to get Diana Taurasi to like talk crap to me during a game.
I mean, that's a good match. did you watch DT's documentary?
So good, man.
That was special.
Just straight heat. Special. Yeah, I mean, she's the best. Just her mindset is, the greatest of all time for sure.
Nah, legendary battles for sure, and you always love, you know, giving the mid. I forget what's her name, Allie Green.
Allie Mann. Yeah.
Allie Mann. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Definitely, we'll put her photo in here. But last rapid fire question I got for you. So I know basketball has taken up a lot of your time, but I'm wondering, if you weren't coaching or playing pro, what would you be doing, like outside? Oof.
I would probably be some type of like sports broadcaster,
journalism or student.
Yeah, I was a journalism major in college. Nice. So I love writing. I love just talking about sports. Obviously now I have to be in front of the camera a lot. So would, you know, really probably love an opportunity to be some type of broadcaster, color commentator, something like that along those lines. And maybe that'll be something after coaching, who knows, but definitely something in the journalism field for sure.
I could see it for sure. I usually don't do a rapid fire, but I have one quick one.
Yeah.
What was your career high in college? Because you averaged 25 your senior year. Yeah. So what was your career high?
I was joking with Harmony about this because she scored, what did she get? Maybe 44 or something like that.
Yeah, she had 44.
Yeah, and I think my career high was, I think it was 42, but don't quote me on that. It definitely was in the 40s. I just don't know exactly what 40 it was. But yeah, that was my senior year sometime. I think it was against Central Michigan.
Okay, that's tough.
But yeah.
42, averaging 25, that's crazy. But we're going to end this episode with a starting five edition. So you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center. Who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the best players that you've coached against. So it could be from your Princeton first stop all the way to now, players that you've coached against. So just tell me where they played at.
Man, oh, man. that's crazy. Okay, well, I think I'm going to go – for my point guard, I'm going to go Caitlin Clark, because we played her the year that I was at Michigan, which is crazy. Cause we played, it was a home game for us. And she scored like, I don't know, 30 something, like ridiculous amounts of points. But we actually won the game. So that's always the fun fact. Did you guys beat her? And I was like, yeah, we did, but she still did her thing though. But yeah, so she'll definitely be my point guard for sure. Combo shooting guard. I'm probably going to go with, maybe Riley from Columbia. Either a combination of her or Abby Shue, 'cause both of them can shoot that thing. So shout out to them. My three player, probably I'm going to go, I'm trying to keep it within the league since this is my current place of work. I got to give a shout out to Ashley Chia at Princeton. She's a little small for a three though. Maybe I'll flip her and Abby Shue Riley. Cause I'm giving small across my front line. But I'm gonna put her up there. I think four player, is one of my favorites. Grace Stone, she played at Princeton. I actually recruited her to Princeton during my first stint, coached her for a little bit. Then we left. And then obviously I had to coach against her, being named the head coach at Harvard. So that was all awkward for me, but love that girl and her family. So shout out to her. She's an incredible stretch four, just a tough kid. Five player would have to be, trying to think. Let's go with, I probably should have looked at this question beforehand, huh? So wouldn't it took me so long.
No, you're good.
I don't know. I'm thinking five players and thinking like Big Ten, because those five players are nasty in that league. Who did we play? I mean, Io was really good. Who was Caitlin Clark? She had a, what was that?
Nice skinned girl. I forgot what her name was.
Yeah. What's that girl's name? I'll take any of their bigs. They're always really good. Angel. I mean, we played against Angel at Maryland. So, you know, I'd take her any day at the five for sure. But yeah,
that's a good lineup. Angel, Caitlin, and Ivy League girls. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, come on now.
But that's gonna do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We definitely appreciate you getting on the pod. It's been a good conversation, and like we said, we're big fans moving forward. So good luck next year.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Always good to talk hoops and life. So thank you.
That'll do it for our conversation with Coach Moore. Really good episode, in my opinion. Like I said, like she's been doing things that not many people have done at Harvard. Like I seen something that she was the first Black head coach, I think, in Ivy history to win an Ivy League title. I might have to fact check myself while I hand it to you, but that's not like a small accomplishment. Like she's got to hold that because, you know, I mentioned this, but someone like me, like I'm looking at that, like, damn, that's a crazy accomplishment. She should feel like she's on top of the world in a sense. But what else you think about this episode?
Nah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, like we mentioned in the intro, a great episode, bro. And, you know, one thing that stood out to me while like listening to the episode and being in the episode, and I don't want to say like she called me out per se, but like she was like, I asked her a question about, is there ever like a struggle with recruiting players to go to Harvard because of the high academic brand that Harvard has? And she was like, no, like that's not even something I think about. Like that's like literally like we're recruiting players and we're telling them like, if you want to be a high achiever and you want to come here to Harvard and win, and you could still like play professionally and come here and get all the, you know, get that Harvard degree. You know, she's recruiting high achievers, like I just said, and I totally respect that. And I think that's a lot about just maximizing your resources at hand, you know, whatever situation you're in, figuring out like how to bring in the best, you know, talent. But definitely, you know, a little something I thought about after the episode.
Real quick, I fact checked myself. It wasn't an all Ivy, but it was at Harvard. So that's still a crazy big accomplishment, changing the narrative about what it means to be, you know, a Harvard women's basketball coach. But along the lines of like the brand, like you're wearing the Iowa State shirt right now, you're trying to cover it a little bit, but when, say for example, I'm like, oh, we're about to drop with Iowa State, people are like, yeah, that's cool. But when I say to a few people that I talk to, oh, we're about to drop the Harvard women's basketball, they're like, how'd you get Harvard? Like that's so that brand is really strong around the country. People know about that brand and hold it to like a high major pedestal, to like higher than some of the actual high majors. So mm-hmm. It's kind of cool that she, like you said, she's not really looking at it as like a disadvantage. Like that's cool in itself. You get to talk to whoever people think of you as like a high major program. But
I think Harvard is going to do some big things, and we're big fans of Coach Moore moving forward.
Oh, so. Yeah, big time, big time. Well, she already says she already knows. I'm tapped in all the way.
We got to catch a game this year. When they come to Columbia, you should pull up. Right. But that's going to do it for another episode. Make sure you go follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all the social media platforms. Make sure you subscribe, like the episode, and we'll definitely see you next week on Thursday. We got a banger dropping. Make sure you go check out our most recent episode with Duncan Robinson after you listen to the final of this. And we'll see you next week.